Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast. I'm Ollie Lum, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Matt Seddon. This week, we spoke to Irish international, Sean Tobin.
Yeah, welcome back, guys. So, a little life update with myself. I turned 25 on Friday, so thank you for all the birthday wishes. A few of you wrote in to me, so I really appreciate that. And also, I'm now unemployed, which is also super exciting because I'm looking to spend a lot more time on the podcast. Up in the podcast game a little bit, to be honest. So if you just keep sending in feedback for us so we can just keep improving, any guest suggestions that you want, you know, let me know. We can work on getting them on as well. Anyway, back to our guest Sean Tobin today, aka the Irish Hammer. He's definitely worth the nickname that he has, to be honest. He's a world-class athlete based in Dublin, runs for the Dublin Track Club, helped set that up himself as well. Look, he broke onto the scene last year, running 7:45 for 3K outdoors. He's paced some memorable 3K races on the Diamond League circuit as well, especially the one Ingebrigtsen, V. Kip Lima and Stuart McSwain. And look, this little Irish Hammer, he's going to be one to watch come Tokyo. Listen up, it's a fascinating story of his this far. And as always, enjoy the Sunday podcast. Hey, Sean.
How you doing?
Hi, mate. You all right?
Good, yeah. Did you just watch that?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Look real messy. Everyone looked comfortable.
I was just thinking that. It looked like a weird race. Like, even Barrega looked like he started sprinting midway, didn't he?
Yeah, so they had to go around the pacer and then just fucking start. Yeah. So, and like, no one really wanted to go with it. So, well, Costin with it, but like, yeah, it was just, no one looked comfortable. It was a weird one.
Yeah, he looked like he got hung out to dry a little bit, Andrew.
Yeah, so that's where you're like, oh, fuck, now he's just going to serve as a second pacemaker, so.
Yeah. I know, man. So, do you, mate, are you all right if we just get started then, yeah?
Yeah, no problem.
Good man. We'll talk about Andrew and the Dublin Track Club later, to be fair, but I thought we'll just start at the beginning. And obviously, us being from, you know, England and growing up over here, I think we haven't had any foreign guests on, actually, so you're the first one. So cheers for coming. And just talk a little bit about what it's like growing up in Ireland, how you got into running. Just start there, really. Like the club, I don't know if you have like a club system over there. I presume you do, but yeah.
Yeah, like all kids, really, I guess we're just kind of, they just really take part in everything, you know. Every sport really are doing as a kid, and like for me as a kid, we just seem to be outdoors all the time. Like, I think we were probably the last generation to kind of just escape that kind of like phones, video games, or like you still had your whatever, your PS1 and stuff, but like you still spent most of your time outside and but like anything really, then I kind of just through school, we always had like these cross-country trials to make like to the team, and I was like 9 years of age and pretty much started there and got second or third in the trial at the time, and just went to local cross-country race, and I kind of took off from there. The guys asked me to join the club and pretty much got into it from there. And then from 9 years of age, you're just kind of, you're in it for a couple of years, taking part in everything, doing every single event, and kind of enjoying the team aspect. Like, we used to love it as kids because, I mean, you just jump on a bus and you could be anywhere around the country any weekend, you know. I think, like, obviously, you know, then the big the big one is the hurling and the Gaelic football. Like, that's what everyone pretty much participates in. So, like, for us, I guess it was a bit of a luxury to kind of go outside of the county as well and go around. And, like, I even know as kids, like, the idea of going to some competition on the other side of the country and staying in a hotel or something was really exciting, you know. So, like, all things like that was always fun. So that's pretty much how I got into the sport. And, yeah, it wasn't really until, like, 16, 17 I started taking it a little bit more serious.
Yeah, man, I know a little bit about Gaelic and hurling. My sister's boyfriend's Irish.
Okay, yeah.
I mentioned I had an Irish guy on the podcast, and he was like, "Oh, where's he from?" But he's from Kilkenny, so I don't know whereabouts you're from. If you were near that or
Tipperary, so they're like Tip and Kilkenny are like the two big hurling rivals.
Yeah, he said. Yeah, he said you might bring up hurling. He doesn't know anything about it. He said. But I hear your point about, you know, when you're a kid, it was, and I know it's like the same for me and the same for the lot as well, like the chance to go on a school trip, for example, and do a competition somewhere or like English schools for us was always a big one because we got to go on the coach, stay overnight with our mates basically and race the next day. And it was like, you know, we lived for that. And does that carry over now you're a bit older? You know, now you're like searching for international competitions. Do you still get that buzz, or are you just like, oh, there's the competition, you know, I'll go do it?
The really big turning point for me was it was around 2010. Our kind of Olympic Council took like a big kind of developing group of athletes to Romania on a training camp, like to prepare for like, or to give athletes the feel of kind of a training camp and being with all the other sports. And that was a year before the EYOF. So the EYOF was 2011, but I remember just that trip, 2010 Romania, and like, I just couldn't believe it. Like, oh, geez, everything's looked after. You went out in this camp and you're training and like, and you're meeting all these other athletes and it's a bit of fun. And I think that was the, like, for me growing up, we never had, like my family, like we always kind of just done like family holidays in Ireland, never really went abroad. So like that was kind of my first real experience kind of getting abroad and seeing somewhere like Romania, completely random, never been back since then. So, but like that experience just got me fired up. And then the year later, I was like, oh, like I want to make the European youths and get there and pretty much just took off from there. So, and like I've always been around that team aspect as well, and like through the schools competitions and having team cross country stuff. Like I've always been involved in cross country, but never really started taking the track a little bit more serious until I was around under 18.
Yeah, that's interesting. You mentioned like the team aspect there. Did that kind of influence your choice to like go to the NCAA at all? Because obviously it's massive out there as well.
Yeah, like I never even thought about staying home. Like it was just, it was never really at the university. I just, because like when I started getting interested in the States, like I would have been about 16, 17, and you're starting to watch all the like the flow track stuff and you're like loving all of the like the workout Wednesdays, all the college stuff, loving the NCAA cross country. Like I just thought that was really exciting. Then the outdoor and indoor champs and you're loving it all. So, and that just always appealed to me. So I definitely did the NCAA system would have been, like I knew it was all built around the team. And so that's something I really wanted.
What took you to Ole Miss in the end then?
Oh, so pretty much Ole Miss was like, I was chatting to a number of schools. And at the time at Ole Miss, Gavin Kennedy was the coach. Now he's at Wisconsin as an assistant under McBurn. But like for me personally, I kind of wanted to do something different. Like I didn't kind of want to go down the traditional route of the Ione or the Providence or Villanova. I kind of just wanted somewhere the main thing in my decision was just finding somewhere like that was nice, like pretty warm. I just want like that, obviously that's a luxury, warm somewhere like I could just really see myself kind of being happy 4 years. And then like I love the idea of the underdog story, you know. But we went into a program that, like, it's a big risk at the same time, but went into a program that had no history in distance running or no success. Like, they never made an NCAA cross country team or anything like that. Like, they only had one individual. And it was like a Kenyan guy that they brought in. And so, like, that really excited me. And it wasn't really until I took my visit there and, like, everything about the place was just like, everything just revolved around the university, you know, kind of that passion. Just everything was like, facilities and stuff was amazing, but like, I wasn't really looking for fancy facilities or anything. I was just, again, back to kind of somewhere I could see myself just being happy for 4 years and enjoying it, and like, knowing that I'd have a good support team around me. So, but I had made that decision, and then pretty much about 6 months later, Gavin Kennedy got let go. So then I was kind of on the fence and going, oh, what do I do now? You know, and I kind of really, I'd already committed. And so I kind of waited it out and waited till January. And I got a chance to get talking to Ryan Vanhoy, who's still the current coach, and pretty much chatted to him for about 6 months, and then was quite happy and just went out in January and just pretty much took off from there.
Yeah, I like the idea of America. The fact that, I think for athletes, like you say, when you go to university like Ole Miss, it's a university town, and you know, everything revolves around it. And I think it almost gives you the same feel. I don't know, I could be wrong, but does it give you the same feel when you represent Ireland? When you say if you run for Ireland or you run for GB, when you race, you're representing something bigger than just yourself. It's not like an ordinary meet. And I don't know, does that to me, it seems like it would transition to when you run for Ole Miss, for example. You feel like you're running for something more than yourself every time you step on the track.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think, like, that even goes just, I think even your, like, your own training groups and everything. Like, one thing with the NCAA system is, like, you're living with the guys, you're training with the guys, like, you're always around them pretty much, like, outside of classes and in classes sometimes. So you're always with the group, and it kind of, you develop a kind of family bond where, like, especially when you're away from home. And, like, because really any, like, all of us on our team, no one was really from Mississippi. So we had, like, one guy on the team that's from Mississippi. So everyone was kind of away from home. So I think that just, you build that bond together. And I think we went through so many highs and lows as well. So you did have that feeling, like, every time you stepped out there, you kind of wanted to represent the brand, like, the Ole Miss brand. And I think it was something for us as well. Like, we were very lucky. Like, even the athletic director was behind us, you know. It was great to see. Like, most athletic directors would only really care about the football team, baseball team, basketball, you know, anything that really generates money. But we had an athletic director that would come to the competitions and watch us. And, like, that was exciting, for especially for a Power 5 school, you know, the big football school. So to have that, but yeah, you did really just want to get out there and do it for your team all the time. And it was very exciting.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. And I think, like, we're seeing more and more sort of, like, pro teams adopt that kind of team atmosphere. Is that something that you looked for a lot when you finished college? Because obviously, like, you're with Dublin Track Club now, and you spent some time with some other groups as well. Is that something that you wanted to do rather than just go it alone, I guess?
Yeah, like, definitely. Because, well, when I left Ole Miss, like, at the end of it, it was just mainly, like, it didn't work. Like, I thought I'd end up in one of the post-collegiate groups, as most international athletes probably do think when they're out there, that you think you're going to end up in a US post-collegiate group. And really, I think you just, unless you're kind of winning NCAA titles or top three, and it's very tough. And I got, like, pretty much that experience where I was running pretty well, but not well enough. And my last outdoor season, it all fell apart, really. And then originally I thought I'd end up in the Reebok Track Club with Justin Knight and Robert Domanik and those guys. But then I just came home with no plan and was all over the place, spent the summer just being a bit lost, and then was lucky enough then, got in contact here with Phelan Kelly, who's kind of developing to Dublin Track Club. And that was kind of my view there, to try develop our own group here and create something like that. And I think it's definitely the way to go. Hopefully we can start seeing more European groups and professional groups like that out there, because it gives you the same feeling of of excitement for teammates and building and training together and doing everything together. Obviously, it's a lot more cutthroat now when you don't have the funding of an NCAA system or a Bowerman track club or Oregon track club. We don't have that really in Europe. But it is something that is really exciting that we're enjoying right now. And because you learn a lot more going through that as well, the highs and lows, and you get a lot of knocks, and it's a fun process.
Yeah, I think it's probably shaped you to almost a better athlete today for it as well, rather than just, like you say, going into the Reebok group, and you may not have, sometimes when it comes a little bit easy, you just go into a group. Because there's a lot of American groups where there's a lot of guys who, don't get me wrong, it's hard, but there's a lot of guys who will just sort of stay on that college level that they're at, that real high college level, and they can't seem to sort of bridge that gap to almost like breaking it to the elite, even though they are and it's technically elite getting paid for it.
Yeah, I found the best thing that probably happened to me was everything just falling apart and really going to shit at the end.
Run us through your last like 6 months to a year there. Because I know, like you say, because college athletes, most Americans, they just accept that they're done, don't they? At the end of the 4 years, they just go, okay, that's going to be me unless I'm winning NCAAs. But run us through, like, obviously, you're trying to shoot for a pro team. Were you putting too much pressure on yourself?
Yeah, 100%. Like I knew, like, obviously, the year before, we had a couple of guys leave us. So we had, like, Engels and our guy MJ Erb, who both left it. Got their professional contracts, and you're kind of looking at that, and that's very excited for. And like we had a very good team, and the lads would always kind of be joking about have their hashtag get that contract, So you're always, everyone was kind of like on that mindset of like right after, yeah. And like even my last year in the cross season, I just had a mental switch as well, whereas like I was a lot more focused. I knew what I needed to do, and even that last cross season, I spent most of it dealing with a anter issue, so that was like putting stress on myself and panicking, going, I'm not getting the work in, and it's not going to work out. And like I had an average enough season the whole way then up to NCAA cross, and NCAA cross, I got 12th there, which was a pretty good run. I got greedy with about 2K to go and could see 8th and 9th. I was like, get it. And I was just like, got up high as 10th and kind of blew that last even 400 meters. And it's terrifying because you're looking, you're like, if you have any look behind you, you're like, there's 30 guys here that could just swamp me right now. So you're trying desperately. But like that was kind of the first breakthrough for me. And I remember even then 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later came back and raced at Eurocross, and I was 15th there, which was a decent run for my first kind of Eurocross at senior. And then pretty much got straight into the indoor season when I went back over there and ran 3:58 for the mile to open up the season, which was a PB. So it's kind of like when I went out there originally to the States, like I just hit the ground running. Like I ran 3:59 straight off the bat for the mile, and it was like running 1:47 for the 800. Like my PBs were just smashing them. And I kind of got stuck there for about 3-4 years. So it was finally that last year, everything was starting to come together again. And then we were like, it's, the ball was rolling really. Things were going well. And then we went to a race for DMR, and after, like, it was decent enough, but like I ended up getting food poisoning after, and like myself and Robert Domanik, and we were in bits then. And I went, like, I qualified for NCAAs, got through just by the skin of my teeth pretty much into the final, and then got into that and finished dead last. And I was just cooked. I had nothing there. And that was like, but still I'd made an NCAA indoor final. I was like, okay, I was hoping that would give me hope that I could get a contract. And then outdoors, I kind of sat down with my coach and we were looking at what's probably the best way we could potentially win an NCAA title or finish top three. And the steeplechase was like wide open that year. So we were like, okay, let's have a go at this. And ran my first steeplechase in California, ran 8:53. It was all over the place. Didn't know what I was doing, but like, and then ran two more and they just got worse and worse. And mentally, I was just, I was fed up of it, you know, and everything.
Yeah.
I was a bit miserable. And I came home that summer desperately just trying to race everything, hoping that I'd get good results somewhere that would get me a contract. And then my results were just getting worse and worse. And I just packed it in for summer and pretty much reset from there.
I think it's weird. Like when you, I think sometimes when athletes search for it so much, it just never comes. And then it just comes at the most random times, like the big performances. Yeah. Hey, that's interesting. You dabbled with the steeplechase though.
Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't it? Oh, it was an interesting one. I think, and definitely it was, it's an event that clearly takes about a year, probably 2 years, just to even get with it. It's obviously not an event that I think someone can just jump right in and expect something to happen. Like it's a totally different event, no matter what engine you have.
Mm-hmm.
It's something you really need to learn how to work with.
Yeah, that's always been my thing with a steeplechase. Like you get guys who can run like yourself, you run a quick 3K and you think, geez, my conversion, I'm going to be 8:15, 8:20. And it just surprises people how far off they can be.
Grueling event as well. Like I've never had that feeling of just being absolutely legless and going, I don't even think barrier or even like under 800 to go, going, I'm in big trouble here. I can't even get over it, you know. And it comes to the point like you're not racing anymore. You're just in there for survival. You're like how can I finish this bloody thing?
I think it's so true. I think like you say, it's so humbling as well, because you'll be someone who, like typically in athletics, you know your position, who you're racing, the level you're at almost. And then when you do the steeplechase, you're like, I'm way better than these guys and they're somehow ahead of me. Like, I think that can be a little bit humbling as well.
Oh, well, it definitely gave me a knock and maybe just reevaluate and go, right, yeah, I need to get my shit together as well.
Right, let's talk about your current setup right now then. So what does it actually look like? And I guess for people who might not know, who are the Dublin Track Club?
Yeah, so Dublin Track Club is basically all based off the Melbourne Track Club, really. So our link will be obviously Nick Bedeau, and Phelan Kelly is the coach here. So pretty much we'd work off the guy's philosophy of training. Phelan and Nick are quite close, so they're pretty in contact all the time. So pretty much Nick has been pretty much a mentor to Phelan, and then he's got other coaches always he's chatting to, and it's kind of just trying to develop a system like those guys, because those guys are probably the closest to us in terms of culture, set up, in terms of funding, like everything about it. Really, it's like their group is very impressive considering the guys don't have any big financial backing besides their basics of the contracts and prize money. So like it's very impressive how they've been so successful as well. So pretty much, yeah, based off that, we wanted to create that in Ireland. And like really for the last 10 years, 15 years in Ireland, just distance running, the standard has just is dropped. It was awful, you know. If you look at just the list, you know, there may have been one or two good athletes always there, but like the depth was completely gone. There was just, you didn't get, like we were looking at Olympic Games and you're not getting no 1500 guys, no 5k guys, no under 10k, you know. You might have one guy in the eight or like, so it's like we had a couple of marathoners, but like just the standard was completely gone and no one are there. So the goal originally was coming in was just to get back there, to have people making teams, getting on to the Olympics and being competitive on the international scene. So that's where we pretty much want to be and are working towards. So now it's been tough. Like we've pretty much gone from scratch, you know. You're not really, you're struggling. You don't have your funding. You don't have anything fancy. Like for me personally, it was Phelan, the coach, Phelan Kelly pretty much saved me in terms of, like, he brought me in, he gave me somewhere to stay. He slowly built up my confidence. You know, he gave me the opportunities to just train, focus on running. And then I was lucky then to get some financial backing from Richard Donovan, who's Richard's the director of the Global Running Adventures, so the Antarctic Marathon. And,
wow.
And but like, so we're lucky to get his support. So I pretty much started from there and just trying to get guys together and train together and bring people together. So that's where we're really at right now. And it's been developing well so far, you know, we're learning a lot. And like, I've spent two years out in Australia now, like at 3 month blocks out there, even just training with the Melbourne Track Club guys and learning from them. And kind of, you just see everything about it, their professional approach towards things and their mindset. And I think that has kind of allowed me to believe that we can be competitive as well and kind of push onto the international scene.
Yeah, man. I was going to ask you what the link with the Melbourne was. I didn't actually know that it was like set off the back of them, and the two coaches knew each other that well. Because I saw you were training out there a little while ago, and I was just thinking maybe you were like joined Melbourne and then you just came back home and like didn't train with them. But it's the same philosophy then, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. Obviously, I'd love to live in Melbourne. It's a beautiful city and everything.
Well, I think they have it perfect, because they train their winters in Australia, in sunny Australia, and then they come over here in Europe in the summer and they just never see a rainy day.
Oh, it's great. That's like absolutely gutted. I couldn't go out there this year. You know, like we would have planned to go back out there from December much to March again and get that block of training out there. So and it's obviously it's an amazing feeling when you're getting to enjoy summer out there, and you know it's pretty miserable at home.
Yeah.
Getting to work out there, so it's and just even experience a whole new country and even the racing scene down there, it's pretty exciting. You know, they love their athletics down there, so that was fun to be part of as well. So and then just knowing you're training with a very high level group.
I love the, as well, like I agree with you on the point that they're the closest culture to us, who seem to be replicating like a lot of success right now. In the way, like even the way they're like governing body runs things as well, and their sort of club structure, as I think America, even though it's a similar culture, the way the whole athletics world in America is run is just completely different.
Yeah.
So you got to work with what you got. And I think for a lot of time, you know, Europeans would just be like, oh, well, I don't live at altitude. I'm not Kenyan, you know, and they'd almost make excuses and they think, well, how am I supposed to be good? But, you know, with, like you say, you guys, the Australians, Ingebrigtsen, you're proving that you just got to work with what you got, you know, and there's so many different ways to make it. You know, the Ingebrigtsen do most of the training on treadmills. They live in Norway, support, you know, but typically you would have been like, no chance, but they've proved it can work. And the same with you guys and the Australians and now doing the same thing. It's like, I think anyone can make it in this running game.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I think, and I know like a lot of people like, oh, it can be a struggle for the Kenyans and Ethiopians, but like some ways it's easier because it's just their lifestyle is a bit more laid back culture, and there's more adapted to running in terms of a European and kind of Australian lifestyle is that you're expected to go in, you're expected to get a job, you're expected to work, you know, you like those things. Then you're trying to deal with high rents and everything like that. So it's just, and trying to get, like, that's probably some of the hardest things for our group is pretty much just getting people covered and getting people actually to be able, like, no one's living together in the group. So that, like, that's the hardest part. Like, you still get people kind of living at home. Got some guys in college trying to make things work, and then a few guys just trying to even balance work and running. So I think that's the tough part. So it's hard to compare groups like that, like ours, even to just the likes of the Americans who have the big funding or the African. So it's nice that be able to be see how things are run like that and have that similar culture. So it's just making things happen, really.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting, like, you talk about a culture, and I think, man, I've spoken to a few people who are, like, involved in different groups, like, particularly, like, new and upcoming groups like yourself, and it's exciting to see that actually we're seeing a lot more talk about culture and how that's the key thing here. We're not always talking about special sessions or secret training or anything like that, and it's actually just a culture of guys or girls and people being on the same page. Can you just, like, tell us a bit more about the culture at Dublin Track Club and at MTC as well? Like, what kind of makes you guys special, I guess? What's your main, like, goals and things you share with each other?
Yeah, like, the big one is just the first, obviously, and the obvious one is the group itself, you know, it bringing people together. You know, you're getting, like, it's guys, getting guys to park their ego to the side and going, like, just going to train, and then look, if your session's 8x K, just do your 8x K. Who, like, if it's a second or slow or whatever per rep, you know, if it's a bit, like, just don't stress, you know, it's like you're getting the work done, you're, like, things like that, you know. There's so many people that are just obsessed with the training, they're obsessed with all these charts, you know, and oh, this is how we have to make it, you know, these progression charts and, like, all these high performance things. It's like, it doesn't work like that. You know, so I think the big part is just bringing good athletes together and have people training together, and part of it of just enjoying it as well, you know, people coming together, enjoying just turning up to the track, having each other, helping each other, and the simple things of just going for a coffee after training, and those little things, like, it's kind of bringing that friendship and enjoyment together. And then when you're bringing people together, you're trying to want to succeed together as well. Like even just sitting here now tonight about to watch Cosburn race, I'm just like, you're sitting there just going, fuck, I'm more nervous here than I will be for my own watching his race, you know? So it's like nice feeling like that. And then even over the weekend as well, like we had Brian Fay in the group. Unfortunately, Brian just got run off the 3K team and the 1500 for Euro Indoors, and like we just spent the whole weekend just absolutely gutted, you know. And like when you're sharing those kind of emotions for your teammates and other guys you're training with, like, you know, it means something. So that's really the kind of culture you're trying to develop, and wanting to see others succeed, kind of parking that ego together or aside. So simple things like that, I think that's the big part, and getting people then to learn pretty much just what to, like, even being on that European type of circuit and going there and training, like learning how to travel, learning how to live together, just everything like that. Is there's so much more to it than just going, right, there's this race, we're going to run this race, we're going to go to this camp and do that and plan this and everything. And I think that's where COVID's been good as well, because people kind of have to be ready for anything at the same time, but kind of be relaxed and patient as well. So you kind of just be ready to make a decision at any second, or get a phone call and be like, right, there's a race for you tomorrow, you need to go there. And somehow you're panicked, trying to get COVID tests, trying to get everything together, or, you know.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, we also, like, discussed before, we wanted to ask you about like your pacing job. You had a pretty big one in the summer. Like, how did that come about with the 3K?
Yeah, so Nick Bedob is my agent. So pretty much Nick, just pretty much told me I'm pacing Rome. So I was like, well, that's it. I'm in there, and they wanted to, originally going over, I was being told the pace was like 4:02. They wanted through 1600. So it's like, okay, like it was a bit nerve wracking, but like, I was like, and then once I got there, it was like, all right, now it's 4 minutes. And I was like, I was absolutely breaking it, you know, geez, I'm going to have to get right. Like, and then even Jakob coming up to me before the race as well, going like, right, 4 minutes. Like, you think you can do that? You know, it's like, I fucking hope I can do it, you know? But I had the confidence I could do it, you know, and I was actually, like, I was just pleased as well. I didn't have another pacemaker in front of me, because it's easier to judge as well when you can, because again, I had to make it to a mile at that pace, so, which is 3 seconds off my PB. Like, I think I'm in better shape than that now, but on paper, it was only 3 seconds faster than 3 seconds slower than my PB, so kind of going in there, and then that once that happened, like, I couldn't believe how smooth and comfortable I felt that day as well. So, and then that, I think, was a bit of a big breakthrough. Like, I was looking at that, that pace job was really helped me in terms of confidence and just being there at a diamond league and being part of that, that environment of going, you know what, I actually love this. You know, like, this is what I want to do and this is where I want to be. And I want to get into these races eventually, you know, to and be racing. So I think that pacing job just gave me that extra kick and confidence and hunger to just keep kicking on from there. So, and they're fun. Like, it is fun being a pacemaker at those and getting to meet the athletes and getting to meet the guys and just being at circuit and in the environment.
Well, I remember, like, almost Crammy was slagging you off, wasn't he, at the start, or like during, he was like, oh, I don't know if he's going to be able to make it. But then once you did you go on a little bit further as well? Or was that a different race? I thought you went to 2K.
Yeah, I know. I went 100 meters extra, 100 meters. Like, I felt pretty good. And I was like, do I get him to 2K? And like, I got to the point, like, I was still felt very comfortable. Like 1500, 1600, I got to 1700, 1750. And I was like, I was starting to work there. And I was like, I didn't want to get to the point where I was going to start struggling. And like, obviously as a pacer, you want to feel as smooth and comfortable as possible and give the guys that kind of vibe as well, that you're comfortable and this is cruisy, rather than front and straining, you know, just to get there. So I pretty much stepped off at that point.
I was going to say, like, it was almost like, I know it was a pacing job, but it's almost like that was your breakthrough. And it's interesting. Yeah. You said to yourself then as well, like, it gave you the confidence to go and kick on. And I remember a couple of weeks later, you went and ran your 3K PB, wasn't it? 7:45.
Yeah. I put in just such a big block of training. I was due to actually run Hamburg Marathon in April. And so that got cancelled. So I had this whole pretty much 3 months of a marathon block put in. So like, I knew I was really fit and ready to go. So you're just kind of desperate for races. And like, that was pretty much it. And then ran that. And then I knew it. I just needed opportunities. And I think as well, that was another thing that pacing job gave me, was opportunities to actually get into races. So, even that, like Paul Robinson, always kind of says it to me now, like even going then and running that 7:45, he can tell, like, I'm a lot more relaxed. I feel like, because for so long I was so stressed about feeling like I had to do something or I had to prove something, and that then 7:45 just allowed me to actually sit back a little and go, right, things are going well, like, now I can actually just focus on competing and getting and just improving and keep working. So now that's helped me kick on as well.
Yeah, let's just talk about the pacing itself. Because you said it then as well, you don't want to, like, there's nothing worse than seeing a pacemaker who's like kicking their last lap or whatever just to hit that pace. Because I think it throws the athletes off a little bit, and you know, they get in the way a little bit. So how do you approach that, thinking, not only have I got to do a 4 minute mile, I've got to try and do it evenly and comfortably, because it's not like a 1500 or a race where you can go, okay, I'll go out hard, slow a little bit, kick the last lap, you know, and run a 55 or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's definitely more nerve wracking. Like you are stressing, and like, especially the indoors, it's even more stressing because it's trying to get to the front can be quite difficult. So yeah. Like, it is that matter of going, right, I need to be controlled. I need to not get over excited and be calm, but make sure the job gets done. And as well, it's trying to read the race as well, like, read what's kind of going on behind you. What does the athlete want? You know, are they clipping at your heels? Like, do I need to push on, or are they comfortable, or are they dropping off? So that's again, it's just, it kind of unfolds when you're out there as well. So it's a tough one, you know, you don't really know what's going to happen until you're out there, and then you're just trying to get the feel of things. And but then I feel like it's nice when you don't have people coming up constantly going, what's the pace, what are you doing this? Because then I feel like people get kind of overexcited at that point as well. So I think at the higher level as well, I find like the Gold Tour event or the Diamond League guys seem to just be a bit more relaxed and they're okay with what's about to happen, you know, to kind of have an idea of it. So
that's interesting. But at BMC, you've got guys going, mate, we need to be 2 minutes 800. We need to do it, you know. So go on.
Based Cadelcia in Henglo as well, and that was like, it was absolute freezing, it was windy, it was miserable, and like, and they were sitting down as like we want world record, like I was like, we're all kind of sitting there going, geez, like today for world record. Like so pretty much I remember just all of us standing on the line, absolutely no atmosphere, because it was myself and Matt Rams, and we're both meant to be the pacers. I was meant to get them to around a mile to 1800, and Ramsden was meant to try get them to 2K or beyond that at our record pace. So and we just got like, and this is my first experience with the lights as well, the lights on the track. So hated those things, because I just, you're constantly looking at the track, like the lights, and you're stressing and you're tense, and you're not able to get into that relaxed flow, kind of smooth state, and just trust your own instincts. So, but anyway, that day Cadelcia came around me at 1400, and I was just like, you know, choice stood off the track. So, and then next thing, 800 meters later, he went from running 61s to 67s. You're just like, if he let us do our job and actually probably could have got him further. And look, it wasn't going to be a world record, but they still could have ran under 13 minutes and had a day. So you get sort of the worst experience of pacing so far.
The lines.
Go ahead, man. I was just going to say that it's interesting what you said about the lights, because obviously there's been some people who are kind of saying that they're a massive help. Like, do you think it's different being an athlete and having the lights? Do you think it's better as an athlete or a pacer?
Well, I don't, like, it depends. Like, some people I think would like him. Like, I think Ram that he kind of liked him, but I didn't like him at all, because I just couldn't focus on being relaxed and smooth, and you're kind of constantly looking down at what I see. And like, obviously there was two lights, so there was a red light and there was a green light, and you're like, where do I need to be, you know? And think that panicked as well. Like, Delcho was like looking at the red line, which was world record, and you know, and just getting panicked and trying to stay up with that. So I think it really just depends on people's preference. Like, I don't know, like, okay, maybe it might be more helpful probably for someone that's chasing a world record or a pace that they're trying to run a bit more smooth. But like, but a lot of races as well though, it's nearly better off kind of going out a little slower and just closing hard and kind of creating a good race. So it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds. Like, they're still obviously very new on the track, and obviously people are getting, I think, a bit over the top as well, thinking of the advantage that they.
I think you're right. I think they can be a little bit off-putting, because like, the minute you drop below it, you're like, oh damn, I've got to get back on it, and you'd just be up and down a little bit, because if you have like you say you're putting a little slow lap and you're like, oh, you know, I've dropped like a couple meters off it, and you try and pick it up, and like I say, it's almost better you just sort of shut off and trust your instincts.
And again, it takes away from actually again reading the race, you know, reading what's going on behind you, what's happening.
Yeah,
like personally, am I smooth, relaxed, you know? Again, I think that's one of the big things with pacing, is that you actually want to be smooth and allow the athletes to feel comfortable behind you. So it's like just being in a training session, you know, if you're doing reps and the guy is whoever's taking the rep is absolutely bollocks, like, what do, like, it makes you feel uncomfortable. So
Hey, just one last question on the pacing. How much do you get paid? I don't know if you can share that, but I know there'll be a lot of listeners just wondering, because in athletics it's almost like the pacers sometimes earn more than, you know, athletes do. Say if your level, for example, you're earning more pacing than you may be running. I don't know.
Yeah, so I don't know if I can say it or not, but so
but we don't get many listeners, this one.
Depends, like Rome, I think just because of COVID as well, most of the prices were slashed in, I think in half prize money and pacing stuff. So I was originally meant to get, I think it was $1,000 US dollars, and because they've done a good job, they doubled it for me. So I got $2,000 there. So, and then Karlsruhe was $1,300 there. So that's roughly what you're getting.
Yeah.
And like, it really just depends. Like that's a goal tour event.
Yeah.
So obviously then I don't know what it would have been like for the guys actually getting paid for pacing a world record or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. I heard a lot of like talk about the road pacers getting paid like lots of money, like with the maras and stuff. There's like a lot of money available. It's interesting what you say about the track. And I guess it's lines up with the track and the road prize money as well. Yeah. And it's got to all come out of that same pot. So.
It depends on the organizers, you know, like organizers want a really good event and good race, like they're gonna be willing to pay more. So I think at least it does give some perspective as well for athletes, like, and if you want to get good races and bring people in, and like you got to be willing to pay, like even for us as a group, like we know our personally now, like obviously we have the depth in the group that we can help each other out, but like if we did want a really good race to be set up, you know, you have to be willing to pay out as well and create a good race.
Yeah, and it's good to know what a pace job is worth, because like it's not easy to find an athlete who's willing to not race themselves to run that sort of time. Like someone like yourself is like a top athlete, and you're kind of putting yourself out there and taking the pace for other people. So like I think it's good that people understand that it is worth the money to get a standard of pacing at that level.
Sure. Yeah. Sean, I liked what you said about you used it as a race almost as well, given the situation this year. You know, you were like, boom, I've got a chance to pace. I'm going to use that as a race. And then you just bounced off the back of that, you know? Yeah.
Like, and again, for me, it's a bit of screen time as well. So like you're going to be at the pace. Yeah. Like obviously you can go both ways, but like, and the other thing is like, okay, if I can keep pacing and like your face is turning up more and more on the screen, okay, a chance one day you're like, right, there's a lane for you, get in. So. Yeah. Like that's what you're hoping for, really. So,
yeah. I was gonna say, like, how do you discuss how you approach sort of pacing? How do you approach races, man? Because you seem like someone who's quite in tune with their body, and like you say, you're analyzing the race during the race. And I don't know if that stemmed from Ole Miss, because I know Ole Miss and the NCAAs in general is just they're very good at racing and learning how to race. So, I'm wondering if you go into every race with almost like a game plan. Or do you just go in and think, look, I'm going to trust my instincts. I'll do the right thing once the gun goes.
Yeah, like most of the time, it's kind of just listening to the body and going by feel, and kind of getting that, just trying to read things at the same time. Like there's one thing while we were at Ole Miss, like we never had many chances to go out and chase really fast times. Like we always kind of felt like we were competing at the NC, or like, NCAA stuff or like the SEC was a big conference, like that was a big deal to us, and we always felt like okay, we had one or two races before that to run a qualifying standard for regionals or whatever, but you're always in there then racing and working around it. And our coach Ryan Van Hoy was pretty good sometimes of kind of just reading how something might fold, like how the race would unfold, and like it's funny sometimes he could tell you exactly going right, this is what's going to happen, these guys are going to do that, this is what's going to happen, and these guys are going to go out hard and then try slow down the pace, and like we even read that from watching the Virginia Tech guys, like even those guys could read, like those guys, they'd love to get out in like 28-29 and they'd slowly bring back the race and bring it back, like so picking up on things like that, I think you learn how to race a bit more. But a big part, I think it's mainly because of cross country as well, though. I've got that kind of, you in cross country, you need to be able to read your body and know what's going on, because you know if you're on any tough course or anything with cross, if you blow up, you're in big trouble. So,
yeah.
So I like cross has always been kind of my first love all the time. And now it's just more on the track, but. And then again in training, like as a kid, we always like well, I was trained on a sand track, so it was a bit different, you know. Wow. So So you always kind of like, you always had to read the track no matter what day you turn up. Like we always, my coach set the splits, whatever it was, and you still hit the splits. Like you turn up one day, the track could be rock hard, pack sand. So right, okay, you're judging that. And then another day you could turn up and just sloppy, wet and slippery. So you're on the track that day and trying to still hit your splits. So I think a lot of that naturally kind of helped as well, of just getting a feel for the body and times and everything.
That's cool you had a sand track, man.
Yeah. Still have it. That's what I like. So it's nice when I go home and get a bit of work done on that, because you know if you're going well on the sand track,
yeah,
out and fly.
Yeah. Sean, what's your event? Like, because like you just touched upon then about doing a marathon in, you know, last April. And then you've got a stellar 15 and you're a miler, and just are you just
yeah
anything?
Yeah, like that's been probably one of my biggest challenges really, or like, well, it's something that I have a big range, but it can sometimes almost be a disadvantage, because it's like you're left kind of going, what the hell do I do? Because I think for a lot of kids can be easily fooled as well. Like as a school kid, like I ran 150, and then my first year in the NCAA around 147, where I was 147.9, so nearly 147.8 or nearly 148. But like you can easily run something like that and be fooled and think, oh yeah, no, now I'm an 800 guy, or even with the 1500 and a mile. And I think that was probably my biggest mistake in the US, that sometimes I was probably a bit stubborn to not run the 10K or run the 5K. Like I'd run good cross country, but I never ran 5Ks and 10Ks on the track, and I still really haven't had a good crack at a 5K at least. So but when I came and first jumped into the Dublin Track Club, anyway, one of the first things Phelan done was brought me and we done a VO2 max test, and got that done here in Trinity College here in Dublin. And the first thing once I got off the treadmill, Bernard Dunn, who done the test, was like, right, you're wasting your time at the shorter stuff. He's like you're built for a marathon. Like my system, my lactates, my graph, like he's like, you're built for a marathon. So I think that just that itself helped me. Like so many things I got frustrated about in college were races where like I was just like, things didn't work out and I knew I was really fit, and like just so it explained so much to me, you know, and I felt, now I feel a lot more comfortable. I know how my body works. I know probably how I'll race better. And I probably know that like I belong at probably the marathon. Like I was really excited to have a go at it as well. And even a half marathon. So, cause I just never spent the time running the longer stuff. So it's something exciting, but I think it's knowing how your system works as well. Like that VO2 manifest, and my blood lactates has just told me that like I'm going to benefit probably most from a large amount of aerobic work, you know. And it's funny because then I look back at my time in college and go, yeah, most of the time I ran my best races on the indoor season when I came right off a cross country season where you've done most of your big miles, your aerobic stuff, and then we start laying on the track work and I just go backwards. So now I've something that Nick Bidot has in obviously his philosophy as well, that the guys are basically doing threshold and the aerobic work nearly all year round. So that's benefited me a lot. So
I think you see that with a lot of guys, especially youngsters. I don't know if it's the same in Ireland, but definitely like in England, like you see a lot of people come out and like the first track meets of the year, the youngsters, April, May time, all running like some of their best, like 800, 1500 times. And it's coming off what you class as that cross country winter work. And then it stops. And then people are just doing track. And I guess they lose a bit of it. I mean, definitely more and more, we're starting to see more people do that threshold kind of all year round, like you say. Talking about like the kind of VO2 max test and stuff, you're obviously someone you've spoken a lot about how you feel when you're running. So like how do you balance that kind of scientific data with the feeling stuff and how you actually get in tune with your body? Like how do you balance it? Because I guess there's a place for both.
Yeah, so like it was great in terms of obviously I started wearing the heart rate monitor and and for thresholds and trying to get the feel of things and get a better understanding of it. And like after a while, like you know exactly what you're doing. Like and now in terms of most of the time, I'm not running at threshold. I'm probably running at sub threshold. You know, I'm not actually in that zone because I feel like if I was actually have to do that every week, sometimes you're working pretty hard to get into the, sometimes that kind of threshold zone. So yeah, and it's a bit of both. You know, kind of knowing okay, you have the group, so some days you're just gonna chill and relax with the group. And so like for a lot, well, good while it was nice just trying to get into the zones and work off the heart rate and get a feel for it. And then eventually you can kind of toss it to the side. But I think that the more interesting thing with the VO2 is just actually being able to go back a year later, get tested again and kind of see how your graph is looking. And like more, I'd be more interested in just your kind of blood lactates and where, how your graph is built. Like for me, I got to about 19 kilometers an hour without producing really any lactate. And then once I started, lactate, it just went bang straight up through the roof, you know. So it's like while you watch 1500 800 guide, it'll probably, once they start hitting lactate, it'll probably just keep chewing through it, and slowly this graph is just building. So and that I think that's just allowed me to, all right, I'm a marathoner, but so it's kind of having a, like that data is nice to see and go, okay, if I like I coach one or two kids now, and you're like, if I haven't do that now, I'm going, I can look at that and going, right, I can see that you're running probably your threshold too hard, or you need to run your easy run, or like simple things like that. Or do we need to improve other areas? So I think that like that's helped me a lot and have a better understanding of how we work naturally.
Yeah, it's interesting because like you're working on your strengths. And I think a lot of athletes neglect that. They'll think, oh, you know, I'm really good at this, so I'll stop working on that and I'll work on my weaknesses. When I think, if you almost do what you're doing and just keep working on that strength, you just get better and better and better and better. And then soon enough, your weaknesses, sort of your strength, so good that it just evens out that weakness.
Yeah. And again, it's always like back to the phase of building a house. You know, what's the most important thing? Your foundation.
Yeah. So,
and like, it's just building on that year and year, and can you stay consistent on your work, you know? And one thing I always like about our training as well, and that you look at it like, and if kind of anyone, if you're trying to explain training sometimes to someone's like, you're looking at it and go, right, can you do that week for 18 months? You know, if you're looking at a training week, do you think you can hold that for 18 weeks? And it's like, if you can't, well, it's probably a bit too much, you know, or are you going to survive off that? So
really, so is that how you'd look at like a training block?
Yeah, well, in general, like for the moment, like could I see myself running 130 miles a week for 18 months straight?
Yeah.
Probably be pretty tough, you know. I think that's where it probably gets a little harder than, like, I've always been fortunate enough that my body is just taken sometimes what's thrown at me. So but like I think that's another thing as well to take into account. What's the level of where you can take constantly week after week after week, mentally and physically? So
yeah, mate, you are a lean machine, mate. When I watch you run on the track, it's good to see. Yeah, I enjoy it.
Hopefully now we're I think this year will be a good year, you know. Like I know I'm on the verge of a big breakthrough. So
yeah, it looks like that when you watch your race and stuff. You just look like you've got the bit between your teeth and you're just getting after it in even your indoors just recently as well.
It's the confidence as well. Like it comes with it. And like I was saying, those pacing jobs gave me that. And then learning from the Melbourne Track Club guys gave me the confidence. And now I'm excited about it. And I think, again, it comes back to, are you enjoying it as well? Like I'm loving it now. Like I think that was another thing. It took me 2 years nearly to just, after coming back from the States, to be just settled at home, you know, and go, no, this is, you know, like before I get asked by people like, oh, what are you doing with yourself? And you're kind of trying to think of things, oh geez, what am I doing? Like afraid to just go out, come out and just go, yeah, no, I'm a full-time athlete, or this is like, this is my job. And now I have that confidence of going, yeah, this is what I do full-time. I'm an athlete. This is what I want. You know, I want to be at an Olympic Games. I want to be competitive. I think it takes time to have that confidence as well. Like, and it's hard as well when, because like coming out the States as well, you know, they see it as, you don't have a contract, you're done. So like, and I still don't have a contract. So it's like, it's still having that level of confidence to say, yeah, no, I'm a professional athlete, but I still don't have a contract, but that's okay.
Right. It's like, it's almost, you sound, was it Richard Donovan who's sponsoring you, do you say?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's the way run is going, and that's, it's almost better, because you don't want to just rely on a shoe contract. And I think for so long, shoe contracts have had like the monopoly. It's like the only source of an athlete's income, and we're starting to see now things change. And like, I think it's just going to give more opportunity to like people like yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully it does, you know, hopefully more people come on board, and there's like more just random, like, it'd be great to have more, like, I think, like, obviously you look at somewhere like Japan, they have their kind of corporate teams.
Yeah. I think that's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. Things like that. It'd be exciting as well. But hopefully, yeah, that's the way we're starting to go as well. And just, yeah, allowing more people to get after. I think it's another thing as well with COVID, that it just gives, there's more opportunities for kind of athletes to get into races. And, you know, not every field is completely full. They're looking for athletes. So hopefully there's more availability to everyone going forward.
Yeah, I think with the Olympics being a little three in, like, it's going to be 2021 and 2024. It's going to build a bit more excitement. Like, I think we're going to get Tokyo done, and then people start going, boom, Paris, you know, and businesses are going to get on board. Athletes are excited. So I think the sport's only going one way.
Yeah. Something as well at the moment that, like, it's great because there's not much going on. And one thing you have to give to the IAAF, and that is, like, is they're giving, everything's free. You know, people can sit down and watch it on YouTube, you know, and
they've upped their game a little bit in that sense.
Yeah, and we see it in Ireland right now. Like, people are loving athletics. You know, even tonight, like, it was on one of the Irish TV channels watching Madrid. And, like, it's coming. Just, like, a random person can sit down and watch it. Or if they see it shared on any social media platform, they can just watch it. And, like, it's just how much athletics has been on the last month. You know, you feel like there's on every couple of days. And you're buzzing about it, and it's fun. So hopefully we're coming back to the days where now people are actually enjoying it. Now, obviously, then we also have everything with the shoe debate and the whole lot. So, and that's a whole another thing that we're going to have to deal with in the year two as well.
I was going to ask you what your shoe rotation was, just for like runners out there, like maybe junior runners or just sort of beginners, like what like, you don't have to talk about your spikes too much, but just like what your daily rotation is. Are you just someone who beats up one trainer for a while, or do you?
Yeah, like now, obviously, I had the luxury when I was in college that we were just throwing shoes all the time. So, so like we always kind of had it. Okay, once your shoes hit 400 miles, get rid of them. They're dead, you know. So obviously that's to prevent injuries and things like that, but. But now, like I spent a lot of time training, like, in the 4% for a while, and I was a bit ishy about training in the next percents, like, and I started training in those in January, and I can kind of, like, first I was kind of a little resistant against it, and I was like, oh, geez, but you want to always save your kind of racing shoe for, but, like, you see the benefits of actually just being able to train a lot harder, and like, or not even just harder, just generally you're able to go out and do your session and come back and your legs aren't sore, you know, you can come back and back on it. Like, I think that's a lot of things that people aren't bringing into the shoe debate, and it's obviously hard in terms of, it's just a time as well that COVID has come as well, where obviously they're neglecting the point that as well athletes just have had these huge amount of blocks of training in that there's been no races. So what do they do? Keep training? How many athletes have become, who are part-time athletes or trying to balance full-time jobs, are now suddenly have the flexibility to train like a full-time athlete. And you can't even go, like most places, like you can't even go in and sit down in a coffee shop. So what do? You get your takeaway coffee and come back and chill in the house. So there's so many factors to it as well. But I think the the big thing with the shoes is, it's not just race day. You know, the spikes, okay, they probably have, again, the spikes save your legs. Like, you can go race and your legs aren't, like, you know, when you race, your calves are absolutely torn up, especially over the longer stuff. But now you can race and you don't feel too bad. You can just get back on the horse and get training again the next day.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind betting. That's, like you say, that's probably one of the biggest features of it. You know, so you're wearing yours for training. That's interesting. But yeah, you can just train more consistently.
Like, I originally bought them for the marathon, and obviously I was like, right, I just may as well start training in them. So, and it has been pretty nice. So, and even for the days you probably don't feel too good, you're still bouncing along. So,
well, Kipchoge trains in them, so
yeah. Than the rest of us.
Yeah.
No, I've seen Cheptegei doing shakeouts in them before the Monaco 5K the other day.
A couple of guys walking, like, I remember even Jimmy Gressier walking around in them. I was like, oh, bold move, you know? Yeah. and stuff. So we don't, well, not all of us have that luxury. So
yeah,
that's obviously the thing as well. What it, the sad thing is obviously it's the availability, and the price is a bit tough on.
Price on shoes has just skyrocketed, man.
For your price of shoes, so like, you are trying to be careful with them as well.
Yeah, you must remember, like, shoes being like 40, 50 quid.
Yeah. You
know, and stuff. And now you're like, spikes are like 130, them trainers are 250. It's just crazy.
Yeah, like, and obviously they've created this panic buying as well, that, like, it's, well,
yeah,
oh shit, they're available, I need to get these. Oh, and you find yourself buying things and you're like, actually, I didn't need those. So
let's touch upon that a little bit, because obviously you're an athlete who your sponsorship self, right, you haven't got a shoe sponsorship. Was there a point where you were like, damn, I can't get hold of these shoes?
You
almost like, did you have to go through, I don't know, did you have connections or?
Oh, I was funny, because like it was down in Australia, and like when I was training down there, and I was kind of stressing about the shoes, I saw, oh no, like, and you couldn't really get any of them online. So I was meant to run world half first, and like I was kind of stressed, like you were getting to the point where like you were stressing if you didn't have the shoes. So I knew kind of there, and it was just funny one day that I'd like, when I was in Australia, like in Melbourne, I'd often like to just go into the city and sit around and read, or just go to a cafe or relax for a day. But like, and when I didn't have a double or anything, but one day anyway, I just walked into a Nike store and had a look, and the next thing they were on the shelf, and I couldn't believe it. Like, I was like, oh, I straight up didn't, no questions asked, just bought the shoe. And then I was on the phone to Paul Robinson going like, they have the bloody shoes of it, like, on sale here, come down and get them. Next thing he's in buying pair as well. So so like, and I still have those, like those pairs that I didn't wear those for a year, so that's what I'm trying now. But there is that sense of going, oh no, I'm in trouble if I don't have them. So feeling as well when the Alpha Flies were being released, going, oh no, now we're even in trouble that we don't have, like, the late. You know, it's like, but then obviously some of the guys were coming back and going, yeah, they're not actually as good as the next percent. So you kind of could relax a bit more.
I feel like, I don't know how like far they can keep taking the technology. It's almost like it's there now. And there's going to be subtle adjustments, but.
Yeah. So it's I don't know how much they can actually go beyond the next percent. Like, they've created something special, you know, and you don't, that doesn't every year. So it's probably going to take another 10 years before probably to have something to that might up it again. So
yeah, I'd say so. I just wanted to ask you as well, you got the Dublin track merch on there. Are you almost like branding it? Is it going to be for sale? It's a nice little hoodie.
Like, we have a couple of stuff for sale now. And the Irish companies here is kind of helping us out, and just got a couple of things. So that's fun, like, for us in a way as well. Like, it's, you want to kind of create a kind of a feeling that people can be part of it as well. Like, you know, it's in a way maybe to support us as well. So it's like, an at, like if people can buy these, and at least they can see a Dublin Track Club vest on the TV and they can feel like part of it. You know, it's like someone, whatever, you're watching the Premier League and you have your team's jersey on. So it'd be nice if we can get Athletics to go down that route as well, and people supporting and following that, rather than just going, oh yeah, there's my, like, oh, there's 12 athletes on the line, 7 of them have Nike vests and 2 are New Balance and whatever, the others are Puma, or, you know. So it's, you want to kind of get people feeling involved and part of it as well. So, and it's fun, like it's nice to feel part of a team. And I think that's one thing as well, when everyone's wearing the same stuff, it gives you that feel and want to support each other.
Well, yeah, it's just like when you rock up to meet, everyone's like, oh, here come the Dublin boys, you know. Yeah. Or, you know, when you're in your Ireland gear, it's just, you know, you just feel like you're a little bit representing someone else, not just yourself at the meet.
Exactly.
Even for yourself, just being able to rock up in like tracksuit, you know. I feel like Athletics is going that way with the clubs. Yeah. It's going to be back to like you say, you've got Dublin. Over here, we've got a few sort of forming. They don't seem quite as advanced as Dublin, to be fair. You guys seem, you know, pretty well on your way.
Yeah, and it's just going with it, as long, like, it's not like everything is just planned and we're doing it all. Like, sometimes you're just going with the flow and then something comes up and it happens. And so, yeah, you're kind of just slowly just learning as you go. So we'll see. Like, it would be fun to see someone, like, it'd be nice to actually just see, like, even if it was a Nike athlete, still to be able to wear, like, create your own vest and wear it, you know, if you had that availability and that flexibility, really. So,
yeah, and it's almost like it's the way it's going. Like, we've seen, I guess if you think about the kind of big, like, merch teams, you've got, like, BTC and people like Tim and Elite, they're selling out their merch in like, half an hour. Like, when it comes on, you're talking to, like, they've got the same almost clout as some of these clothing designers, in that they're selling out their merch straight away. And I guess it's good to see that Athletics is going that way. And I like your idea there about, I guess, like, when people do get sponsored, being able to still carry on representing their club and just having, or their team, and just having that in with their Nike or their Adidas contract as well.
And, like, it is one thing that, like, a lot of runners love as well, especially all the events that they go to. It's like they love getting their t-shirt, they love getting their little pieces and that. So it is one side of our sport, and I guess, like most others as well, it is nice to just pick up a bit of kit and have that stuff as well.
Yeah. I mean, I know guys who their sole motivation is just to get some kit, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. Look, Sean, it's been great. I just want to ask you, are you doing Euros next weekend? If so, what event? Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. So.
3K, yeah?
Yeah, 3K.
Perfect, man. Looks like it's going to be a tough matchup, actually. I see Jakob announced himself today, did he?
Yeah, so, yeah, was it him and Philip said, I think they're doing the double. So, on like the last Euro indoors, I was the first man out. So, of the final, so I want to change that, you know. But like, I do think the standard's at a different level again, where we're going into, like, it will obviously lack of race opportunities that people want to get in and race. So so I'll be looking forward to getting in and racing. And it'll be interesting to see what a COVID competition is going to, an international competition will be like. So
yeah, what has that been like? Just let people, have you been rocking up with masks, testing? What's this situation?
Yeah. A lot of testing, like getting tests, like, and as well, you're trying to work around, like, you're not getting any leeway just because you're an athlete, like most places. Yeah. Like, some competitions you get a travel letter, others no, but where, like, most of the time you have to have your COVID test within 72 hours to travel, and then you go to your event. Some events require you to get an antigen test right there, and then you're pretty much going to the meet and you're wearing your masks and the whole lot, and just trying to keep athletes separated in there and no crowds. So, but like Euros now is going to be an interesting one, because this is the first time you're actually traveling with an international team.
Yeah.
And the other Dublin Track Club lads, like, we've been kind of living in a bubble ourselves. Like, we spent a month in Albufeira and, like, there was no one there, like no other athletes So it was just kind of ourselves, and we stayed together. No one was meeting anyone else. So the only people we saw was ourselves. So at least we had that bubble. So it'll be interesting going to this. It's a little nerve wracking as well at the same time, going, because you don't know what all the other athletes have been doing. So the scary thing is, okay, what if you go in and there's an athlete that's positive? She's then the whole competition is.
Yeah, I've always thought, what happens then? You know, or you get it. Like, does the whole Irish team not compete? Or it's just, I've always thought, like, it's all well and good, but until someone gets it, what's the next step?
But that's still the one scary thing, to see what happens. But we're a bit more cautious going around the place. Like you're trying to avoid people, you're trying to isolate, you know. Like, but for the most part, anyway, like, I go out the door to run and I come back in. I might get a takeaway coffee and back in the house again, like, and or go to the supermarket and get your food. That's really it. Like, that's how the days are. So,
yeah, I think that's it. Like, you just got to be. So there's one thing not being, like, say, for example, you weren't worried about getting COVID, but it's another thing if you get it, that means you can't race. So you're like double as cautious, you know, because you're like, damn, if I get this, you know, I'm not going to be able to compete at a Euro indoors.
But that's it. It's that. That's the. That's what.
It's not just.
So you're kind of. That's what's scary enough. Like, your whole preparation could be just gone out the window. And I've read stories about. Oh, was it one of the German athletes or someone that was due to race, and was it Valencia Marathon? Like, got a false positive test. You know, you're reading good that as well. He managed to get it cleared, but he couldn't believe he got. I remember reading the article going, he couldn't believe he tested positive because. Mm-hmm. He'd isolated pretty much himself for his training, and he knew the event was coming up. So it's things like that as well. It's terrifying.
Yeah,
you can't ride stuff.
Plus, €100 a test. That's the worst part.
Are you having to pay for them privately then?
Yeah.
Well, of course, you don't. Man, it's the NHS we take for granted over here, bro.
Yeah, so that's it. If you want them, like, and then you're in other countries, you just no choice. Like, that's what you got to do. Yeah. Free one in France, and that was, we couldn't believe it. Like, we're up there, we're like, yeah, we're like, oh, can we pay? And there's like, oh, no, it's free. And you're like, what? Free tests. So, we're delighted with that.
It's better than free shoes these days.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. All right then.
Thanks for coming on there, Sean. I really appreciate you giving up your time. It's been good.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. Hopefully podcasts keep going. Goes well anyway, and you keep getting some guests on, so
yeah.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.